First of all, it's a beautiful Kiddush Hashem. Before we even start, it's not on the sheets, but amazing that such a bikush, such an interest in getting together to get the Dvar Hashem, getting together to know halakha. This increased, as we mentioned, as the Galatian mentioned, it was supposed to be in one venue, and it turned out we had to have a greater place to house this. It just shows how much of an interest is really out there. And if we can spread that and open it up to the public, you'll see that Yad Hashem next time will be even bigger and keep on growing. We've done this in other cities as well, and we've seen how the success. It just keeps on attracting more and more people. Everyone really wants to do the right thing. Today's topic we're going to discuss is about different forms of business practices that might be somewhat deceptive. Most of them are probably going to be awesome. We're going to discuss maybe certain cases in certain situations that might be mutter, and I'm going to explain the differences between them. But to start off, I would like to first thank the Miami North Miami Beach Kailo for inviting me here on vacation. We are really trying to increase awareness in Kesher Mishpat in the whole Florida, and they're working behind the scenes to create a real Bezdin, to create a real Malkum where Rabbanu will be able to field these types of questions and be able to guide the Baal about them. And of course, behind every good project is always those backers who make it happen. And that's where Stock Khan, and now I hear that there's a Valley Bank involved. First time I'm meeting this, but with Stock Khan, we've been doing this already for a couple of years. We know that they're behind this in many, many venues. And that skush should stand for everyone to be masliach in all their endeavors. I'm going to try to, I understand that there are many attorneys in the room, accountants in the room, and there's other areas. I'm going to try to first tread delicately. We're going to try to talk about other areas so you won't feel intimidated, and then maybe we'll move over, depending on the craft, we'll try to move over to areas that might actually apply to your individual situations. But let me start off with a simple case, an interior decorator. I'm not familiar with the interior decorator scene here in Florida, but I can tell you in the East Coast, it's quite a hot scene, and basically every house that's built has an interior decorator. I need somebody to tell me what I should like, because I don't know myself, so I get the interior decorator to convince me you need this couch and that color scheme, and that's how it goes. So we hire an interior decorator, and there are many different types, and there are many different various charges, different levels. And unbeknownst to the public, this interior decorator is coming in, wow, very cheap. She's coming in at only $10,000 to do the house. They have a different tier differently. Sometimes they do it one price for the house. Sometimes they do it a certain percentage for each purchase. Either way, it doesn't make a difference, but this one is coming in on the lower end. So I hire her. And what happens is, behind the scenes, she's making a killing, not off of me, but actually from all the vendors. She's getting kickbacks. Now, coolly, we don't call it a kickback, so we'll call it a referral fee. We'll change the terminology. It's a referral fee. And she's getting what I'm giving her, let's say $10,000 for this house, she's actually making about $40 or $50 behind the scenes. So, what's the point of this referral fee? Why are people giving her these fees, these kickbacks? There's only one reason. The vendors are not willing to part with their money for nothing. The only reason why they do this is because they're trying to lure business. They know that this interior decorator, or any interior decorator, is the key to the clients. That's the way to bring clients into my showroom, whatever it is. So therefore, if I make the pot sweet, if I sweeten the pot for the interior decorator, she's going to bring me more customers. Great, that's a nice business model, but what happens is it interferes with the interior decorator being able to give the client a proper advice. I hire her to give me the best advice possible. So therefore, if I hire her to get me that best couch that's going to fit in my scheme in my house, so my kids could grow up not emotionally disturbed that the couch doesn't match the painting. So I need that. And now what she's going to do is she's going to go and bring me to a showroom who's going to give her a greater referral fee than the other showroom that really I could have gone to. I didn't need to buy this couch. That other couch would have been just as good. Not only that, maybe even better, and maybe even cheaper. And the only reason why she steered me here is because she's getting a greater kickback. And that's the only reason why they get kickbacks, is to try to cause them to be compromised on their advice. So basically, it's interfering, it's inhibiting. It's inhibiting with her process of consulting. She's a consultant. I hired her to consult and give me her best opinion. By her taking a kickback without my knowledge, she's right now a gamut. And I'll explain why. The reason why is because if I would know that she's really getting kickbacks behind the scenes, and therefore she's not sending me into the right places, I would never give her the fee. I would never give her this consulting fee. Because this is not what I meant. This is not what I don't pay consulting fee for someone to give me bad advice. That I can do myself. The reason why I hire her is to give me good advice. So if she's not giving me her best shot, her best advice, then therefore she's not allowed to take her fee from me. She's not delivering the service that she committed to with me. And therefore, every dollar I pay her, she's a ganav on that money. So like when it comes, after 120, she's gonna go up to Shemayim and they're gonna talk about all the mitzvahs that she did, and then she's gonna rack out a bill. She's in debt $4 million of embezzlement. And she's gonna look at them. I'm so straight as an arrow. Well, every single customer you stole from. Every customer you stole from because you didn't disclose that you're getting a referral fee. And it's really uglier than I'm describing. Because what's going on behind the scenes, and kid you not, many of these showrooms had the bill to pay for these referral fees. So therefore, if I would walk in off the street, I could buy this couch for $8,000. But because I was brought into the showroom with this woman, so now it's $9,000. So not only did she give me bad advice, but it's also costing me, because the vendors end up padding the bill, knowing, oh, there's an interior decorator involved that she needs to be paid for as well, and therefore that is a problem. That's a serious problem in halacha. I once told this to an interior decorator, she's telling me, what do you mean everybody does it? So first of all, as a matter of halacha, that rarely is a defense. Really. It's a good thing to know, because for example, I walk into, ShopRite, I don't know what type of supermarket you have here, but I want to shoplift, and they're going to catch me, Khalila, and they're going to say, why are you shoplifting? I say, because everybody does it, right? And it happens to be, if you look, there's about 1 to 1.5% that's written off a year in these big major stores due to shoplifting. So that means they acknowledge shoplifting, and they're not stopping it, so therefore I'm allowed to shoplift.
The consumer knows that everyone does it, so clearly
the consumer knows that every interior decorator. No, they don't.
And if there's all consumers,
if they would know, that would be better. But I wonder how many people in this room knew about it. How many people in this room knows that the interior decorators, without telling you, are taking kickbacks behind the scenes? Okay, so about a third of the. Okay, so two-thirds don't know.
What's the issue with the kickback? If she gives you good advice, then is she still a ganav?
She's still a ganav. Yes, because she's not delivering on her commitment. My commitment was with her is to be beholden to me. Not that she's compromised. There's only one reason why she's been given a kickback, to be compromised. Because if she's always going to send me to the best place for me, why would any vendor want to give a kickback? They're not bringing her, she's not bringing them business.
But
some
stuff she got the right advice. Why is she
not? She's still a gana, because first of all, she's Mishana Medas Bal Avais. It's not the commitment I made up with. And that's the only reason why she's getting a kickback, to be compromised. Now, as a matter of law, for example, the government became a little bit more public lately with the New York mayor, but there's a law, I can't say exactly how much, but a political official cannot take more than a $50 or $100 present. Present, that's how it is, because anything more than that, we're afraid of some type of compromise. I mean, don't ask me what Biden did, I'm not talking about that, but the bottom line is you get some type of referral fee, Your son is like now the CEO of Ukraine on something they have no idea about, and he's getting millions of dollars every year. So yes, that could be a problem, because basically there's only one reason why this is happening, is to be able to create a certain relationship. No better word for that. So bottom line is, this is a problem here. And I'll take a question one second. I just want to hear us here. So all she has to do, when I told this woman, I've told this to many interior decorators, I said, so what's the problem? If you think everybody knows about it, great, disclose it. You're not going to scare off the client, because everyone knows about it anyway. So just disclose, and in fact, as a matter of halakha, you don't have to disclose how much you're getting. All you have to disclose is that you are getting. And I receive referral fees. And that's enough that the client was put on alert that I'm not totally beholden to the client. I have my own best interests in mind, and therefore, they're aware of that, and they realize that they might be getting compromised advice. No, I can't do that. Well, you just told me that everyone knows about it. Why can't you do it? So obviously, they also know that not everybody knows about it. And that's a big problem. Yes?
Does that mean that all referral fees are greater?
See, remember I told you I'm going to start something that's not in your industry and then select back it? So that could be a problem in many industries. Not just interior decorator. I figured that there's no interior decorator in the room. That's a good place to start. But in Konami, we have an issue now, and it's a matter of law. I can't speak for Liridian law. We have a lawyer here who can speak much better than back in New Jersey, and it might be federally regulated, but like certain industries, it's not allowed to get any type of downstream type of income. You can't. Like, for example, title companies with real estate agents with attorneys in New Jersey is prohibited. Now, I can't speak for Florida. I leave that up to the attorneys. But that is a problem. That's a real problem. And over there, it might be a little bit better. And the reason why they might be better is because I never hired the real estate agent to give me advice of which title company to use. So therefore, I only hired her to find me this dream home, which she did. And now, by the way, once I found the dream home, which title company I should use, you know, whatever, ABC company, that's good. But I'm not paying her for that advice. So therefore, she's not a ganav on the money. I'm paying her for the advice maybe to get me the home, which she did a good job on, but the advice of which title company to use was just a free service she provided, so she's not a ganav on any money. So that's better. But it depends on every situation. It could be a crossover. Let me just take a question and then we'll get back there.
So the big issue is the referral fee or not standing up what you're paying for. So let's say she's referring you to certain people, not for a fee, but then they're going to steer customers back to her. She knows they're not the best for you, but she wants that coming back. So it's not money.
So that's the same idea. Is it going to be the same problem? We're talking about less now in the interior decorator?
Right.
Okay, let's take away from the end, right? The lawyers. Okay, so back to the interior decorator. So if the reason why she's doing it is not for my best advice, and I'm paying her for consulting, I'm paying her to give me the best advice, so again, she's shortchanging me, and she's only doing it for her own interest, and that's a problem. Phone down, they had a question. We'll go back and forth. Sorry.
The merchant who's paying the payer of the referral fee, is he also in a problematic situation, or he's clear because he's just doing what's best for him?
The vendor, you want to know. Let's say the showroom, the tile company. So that's a good question. The answer is, well, if the interior decorator is now a goslin for doing what she did, and you're aiding and abetting that, so then you're oiva lifnei iver on that. So yes, all the showrooms and the kitchen design and companies and everything, that whole system could be problematic if it's not disclosed to the customer. The only one saving grace might be is that if the showroom believes that the interior decorator disclosed that to the client, then the showroom doesn't have a problem. But if the showroom knows that it wasn't disclosed to the client, then we have a problem. You were first, I guess.
In the case of the realtor, wouldn't there still be an issue? Because now the title agency, even though there wasn't this dynamic of I'm paying her for consulting, but the title agency is going to charge a couple hundred dollars more to pay her.
They can't. They can't charge more.
It's regulated.
It's regulated. Totally regulated. They can't charge more. But again, even if you're not charging more, but the fact that you're referring me to, let's say, a title agency that's not so much on the ball, whereas I should have been going to a different title agency, so she's giving me bad advice, which itself is an issue, but at least she's not a guy on the money, she's not being paid for that advice. What's that? I think he was first, sorry?
Just to clarify, you're saying she's Goslin because she's buying from the vendor, she should have found a cheaper vendor?
I hired her to get me the best product at the cheapest price.
So why don't you just say that she doesn't go directly to the manufacturer?
She has no way to get the manufacturer.
She never has a way.
No.
Say she's a Goslin for not trying hard enough.
No, you can always get to manufacturer. No, you can't. I don't have to manufacturer. She could go to regular showrooms, and you need to go to a showroom, and you need to see the different things. She has an ID. She has the ability to send me to the right place, and she's sending me to the wrong place for one reason, and that reason is...
She doesn't go to the cheapest vendor.
It's not only the cheapest. It's the best. Best, not lavdavka, means money. Best could mean the best material, the best quality couch, the best color, the best... selection. There's a lot of things that define best. But you have to give me the best. Sorry?
You're saying she's a Goslin because she's not giving you anything
else. She's a Goslin because she's not giving me the advice that I hired to give me. That is why she's a Goslin. Sorry? I hire her to be an interior decorator and advise me where to buy my stuff. And she didn't do that. She did it for her own benefit. She didn't give me the best advice. So for that, she's a Goslin.
How do you know she didn't give the best advice?
How do I know she didn't give the best advice? So first of all,
why is it helpful to say, why is it...
It's a hot topic. Yeah, it's a very hot topic. I'm not even joking about it. I try to stay away a little bit.
Why does it help if she gets a consumer note that the lady tells my wife to shave? Well, you know, I get a referral still in her mind, in my wife's mind, in the consumer's mind, she still thinks she has the best advice for the couches to use. So for the device part, she'll check her.
Everyone understands that referral fees create a conflict of interest. Everyone knows that. It's obvious. And obviously, we also could assume that not every vending is the exact same referral fee, because of the exact same thing that it defeats the whole purpose of vending the referral fees in the first place. So we know that it's different levels, and we alert to one place over another.
How is that different than any commercial? Realtor, they all make a commercial
when
they make a sale. So they have
to present it
for sale. Why is that different?
Well, they're allowed to make a commission, that's for sure, because that's upfront. Everyone knows that the real estate broker knows. Everyone knows it, but they don't know that the interior decorator is making money behind the scenes. That most people don't know. And all she has to do to clear herself is disclose. This is what this year is about. Sometimes we can avoid things by disclosing. Disclose, and then you're good to go.
And disclose, instead of charging more, this person gets a discount from that vendor. It's always A, and everyone gets and this person gets so much flow or forever that he gets a big discount, so at the end, the client's not losing.
Instead of the guy paying the money, he's getting a discount and he's getting
the
difference.
Yeah, the
interior designer, usually it costs $1,000, he's getting it for $800 and the $200 difference, the interior designer gets. It's not cash out of the pocket, but
it doesn't have to be. I just said, if you remember, I started off and I said it's problematic even if the price is not passed. That's what I said. I said it's uglier because it's also bad. Even if it's not bad, let's move on. We can spend the whole day just on this interior decorator. Okay, this is the last session on this. We'll go on.
I think to make it clear and summarize, what you're saying is that if the person would have chosen something else, may have chosen something else, and they're choosing this because of the kickback, that is being influenced, the purchase being influenced by that.
It's the only reason why they get it.
That's it.
Correct. That's the bottom line. So, okay. So now let me give you another. I have to move on. That was instructed. I got to move on. We'll try. Let's go to the next question. The next question is, true story, happened within the last year. there's an insurance broker, a life insurance broker, who had a client who was looking to get a $40 million policy with certain terms. I don't want to go into the terms, but with certain interesting terms, not standard terms, and approached this broker and said, find me such a policy. He looked, and he worked with, let's say, 5-6 different carriers, and he found the best that he has in terms of carriers, and he told it to the client. Calls me up, and he wants to know that really he knows of another carrier that can deliver a better product. What does it mean? It means this person, this client is looking for a litany of terms, out of 5 things that he wants. All of these carriers that he has can only deliver 3 or 4 out of those terms, but there's another company, another carrier, who actually could deliver all 5 terms and actually at a cheaper rate. The premiums will come out to be less. And the question was, does he have an obligation to disclose to this client that I can only deliver from these carriers, I'm only authorized, that's my connection. But you should know, if you go to this other company, you'd be able to get it cheaper and actually satisfy more of your conditions. Does he have that responsibility to disclose that to his client or not? Am I being clear on the story?
I would say, yeah.
Sorry? You're saving him money. It was going to come out that he was being saved. I don't remember the exact amount. $70,000 or $80,000 a year. So it was a significant sum of money to make that happen. I forgot the exact amount, but
when someone engages with you, they're looking for your best offer, not to look at another candidates, right?
He has
that broker for his insurance connections.
Yeah.
Those are not his insurance connections.
Okay, so let's develop this. And this case, so you're saying that what I'm to show is let's just develop this a little bit. When I go to this carrier first, to this agent, first of all, one thing is I'm not paying him. And I can't speak for Florida. I'm talking about East Coast, but I'm assuming it's the same thing. Yeah, I do not pay the agent to get me life insurance. He's being paid by the carriers. So contractually, he's not working for me, but contractually he's working for the insurance companies. Obviously, if he wants to drum up business, he had better deliver a good suggestion, a good advice, because otherwise I'm not gonna refer him to other friends. So obviously they try to help the clients as much as possible, but he's not working for the client, he's working for the insurance carriers. So right away, he's not beholden to me, he's beholden to the carriers. If he's beholden to anyone, it's to the carriers, not to me. So therefore, he doesn't have a contractual obligation. So unlike the case of the interior decorator that's being hired by me, this person's being hired by the insurance carriers. That's one difference. Second difference is that even if I would hire him, we'll talk about such a scenario in a moment, Polineta, but even if I would hire him, I'm not hiring him to give me advice. He's not a consultant. What I'm hiring him to do is to make that connection to the carriers that he has access to. If he only has access to 5-6 carriers, and he can only make those connections, that's all I'm asking him to do. So that he made those connections, that's fine. The fact that he has knowledge in the industry and he knows a better product, he's not obligated to disclose all the industry secrets to every client. I don't have to teach you how to make a ravioli, right? He's not doing that, right? Because that's his business, he knows how to make raviolis. We came here not for his consulting, but we came here to eat, right? We came here to enjoy. So therefore, I'm not paying for that ravioli for the information. I'm paying it to get the product. So here too, I'm not paying the insurance broker, the agent, to give me the industry secrets and get me what's going on in the world. It's just to give me a product that he carries. And if that's all the products he carries, so he's not responsible to tell me about other products. The only thing remaining is what you promoted, what happened to the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. You could save this client tens of thousands of dollars a year. Why don't you have an obligation of Hashavas Aveda to disclose that? And the answer is, like you just pointed out, is you do not have a mitzvah Hashavas Aveda if you're going to get a hefsek, if you're going to get hit with a loss. if this agent will say, don't come to me, but go somewhere else, he'll be losing his commission on the premiums and the residual commissions year after year. He's not responsible to take a loss of money in order to help out somebody else. Our charge of agent is a loss of time and tirka, but not a loss of money. I'm not responsible to lose money. And since this client, if I would direct him somewhere else, he's not going to still pay me my commissions that I would be getting if he had used me, so then I don't have that obligation to disclose it.
It's also unfair because if the insurance company that's selling at a cheaper price is selling cheaper because they don't have to pay a sales commission, and the salesman is obligated to sell their product without a commission,
That's a good point, but actually the story that I was referring to, that other insurance carrier have agents, but not this one. This one is not hooked up to it. But you're right. In concept, that's why the model might sometimes be cheaper. Geico, I don't know, whatever it is. Right? You can go direct. Okay. So we have the differences. Let's talk about a similar type of situation. And that is, I don't know if anyone here is stockbrokers. Anyone who, financial advisors we call them. I don't know, the banks have financial advisors as part of the bank system? Yes, you have one? Okay. So let's talk about financial advisors. Good? This is a bit of a pet peeve of mine. Okay? And that's like this. And that's like this. It goes... I can say this quite nicely. 1 second.
Why?
Why? Okay. So let's just say that studies were done and it came out that the S&P 500 outperforms 90% of the professionally managed funds. Not just let's say, there are such studies. And it happens year after year. So now you come to me as a professionally managed, and I'll take a point up front, at the back end, the front end, in between, servicing every year, I'll take wherever I can. And then you come to me, and I'm in a great, and you know, because you heard in the mitzvah, you heard in the kiddush, that somebody referred you to me because I did great for him, and who knows what I delivered for you for that year, because it was a bumper year, and I went up 20%, unbeknownst to the guy, S&P went up 30 this past year, right? So he doesn't know, he thinks it was great, my money just like, whoa, inflated, great, and he refers me. Now, the idea is that he's coming to me, like, who am I fooling? Can I really outsmart the market? I know that a lot of people think they can, but like Warren Buffett, who like made much of his money through there, has said time and time again that you cannot outsmart the market. What you can do is spread wealth and diversify, but you can't outsmart the market. Everything that you think about the market and all the politics and all the news that you read, everyone else basically read it too and knows, and that's already incorporated in the price, in the fluctuation price too. And most of these managed funds cannot outperform the S&P. And S&P, you sleep well at night, you put it in, you never have to watch the market, you don't have to do anything, and it goes up year after year. Again, I have to make a disclaimer, past performance is no indication of future results, and I made my disclaimer, but the bottom line is that I'm not saying it's the best fund, but it's conservative and outperforms 90% of the funds. Professionally managed funds. So basically, so you're coming to me, so what will I do? I'll sit down with you, what your needs are, of course, and I'll create your portfolio, and the bottom line is, S&P is it will outperform me, most likely, virtually year after year. There will be exceptions, but virtually year after year. Do I have to disclose to you that, hey, don't come to me, just put your money in the S&P and go to sleep? Do I have to do that? And the answer is no, because, again, if you're coming to me for my financial advice, just some advice, maybe we could talk about that. But you're really not doing that. You're coming to me to invest and manage your portfolio, and that's the service I provide. I don't provide just a freestanding, independent consultation. I provide managing people's funds or wealth, right? So that's what I do. So if that's the case, I could do what I could do, and whatever I think is best for you, I'll try my best, knowing that I'll probably trail the S&P. What I don't like is, and that is, that there are people who will bedafka make the portfolio a little messy. And what I mean to say is like this, I've already spoken to people, and they do this deliberately. What they'll do is that they'll invest in a portfolio of quote-unquote hand-picked stocks. Whether they're hand-picked or not, I don't know, but they'll do that anyway. And they'll buy, and they'll sell, and they'll buy, and they'll sell. They'll do this just to see like a flurry of action in the statements, basically sending a message to the client that you need me, because look what I'm buying and I'm selling and I'm in and out of the market countless times in the year, when I don't really believe that's the way to go, but I need to do that because to show you that I'm really working and doing and handling and who knows what, and you really need me, because you would never know when to get into Netflix, when to get out, when to get into Tesla, when to get out. You would never know that, and I know that. Of the other name, but I know that, and therefore, that I don't like, because that's basically you're creating a smoke screen which is not real.
It's the issue. If you're performing, what does it matter? If you're performing well.
Because you're just trying to create a false sense, a false smoke screen, so it's not real. You can invest and give your best pick, but to make that smoke screen is not because you think it's best for the client. If you think it's best for the client, sure, but it's not that. These people admit that it's not the best of the client, they're just doing it to show the client that they're active, that they're doing things, and not that just they're doing things, but also that you can't do it on your own. What Fidelity is trying to promote for the last 30 years, that you really could do it on your own, these people are trying to tell you, no, Fidelity has it all wrong, and you really can't do it on your own, and you need me. So that is unscrupulous. That's a problem.
You're saying the result doesn't matter, intent matters in this case?
Because here, what am I doing here? Just to fool you.
Okay.
Good? Okay. So that's, but here, so again, if you're coming to me in my freestanding consultation, I would be beholden to you. But you're coming to me to invest, so I'm managed to the best of my capability, even though it's not as good, most likely, as S&P. Once we're on this matter, one more, and I'll take a question, is that I'm sure everyone knows that there's a certain secular paper. They don't deserve to be mentioned by name, but there's a certain secular paper that at the beginning of the year, they take a monkey that throws darts, and that's the picks of the monkey for the year, and at the end of the year, the monkey outperforms most professionally managed funds year after year. How? A mazel. Heritage is because professionally managed funds don't really deliver as much as we would like to. There is a need for professionally managed funds. I'm not negating this whole industry. Khalil, I'm not undermining your profession, because what it's nogeya is...
I'll need to respond, bro.
Yeah, for sure. And I'll tell you, when I had this conversation with a professional manager, I had such a conversation with him, and he admitted to me that, yes, I'm right, but he explained to me a certain point, and I'm going to share it with you just to show you the other side. I'm sure you might have more. And that is that for many people, going into the S&P is not the full answer, because S&P is only like sort of guaranteed, never guaranteed, but historically never lost money at any 5-year period. So you have to keep it in a little longer, but if you're only on it short term, it doesn't work for you. If you need to live off some of the incomes, we have to create a portfolio that has something throwing off, like distributions, like treasuries and the like, zero coupons, I got it. And most important, and that's what he told me, that's basically he's very successful in managing that. He earns millions of dollars a year in managing people's funds. He's a great manager. But he admits to me that his pay, watch this,
psychology.
His pay is to be a babysitter.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's getting paid to be a babysitter. You send your kid to play group, you pay $5 an hour, $6, $7 an hour. He gets paid to the tune of, let's say, $1,000 an hour, because he's a bigger babysitter. He doesn't babysit babies, he babysits adults. Basically what he's doing is that when the market goes down, the jerk reaction is to sell, and the market's up, to buy, which is doesn't make any sense, right? You buy high and you sell low, and so they do the other way, buy low and sell high. So basically, he says that basically everyone gets freaked out when the market starts to tank, has a bad day, one day this week it had a bad day, so it has a bad day, and they have that jerk reaction to sell, and he has to hold the hand through the process, just hold on tight, and get to Hashem, the market will go back up, like it has done countless times over the last 60 years. So just wait through, just, it's like a roller coaster ride, just hang in there, you'll get to the top again. So that's what he said he's getting paid for, and I understand it. I got it very well. I understand, and it's true, because instinctively, people have that reaction. I got it, but I'm just saying that you as a professional manager really could do both. you could take a bulk of the money and put in S&P, and maybe if you need some distribution, throw off a little bit on, like I said, Treasury Zero coupons, whatever it might be. There's even fancier products out there now, CDs. There are different types of products that are pegged to the market. We got it, but the bottom line is you don't have to invest in a bunch of individual hand-picked stocks. You can invest in the more conservative, better-producing, reliable performance type of situations like the S&P, and still when the S&P tanks or has its lows, you can hold the person's hand and babysit and make sure that he doesn't sell. So there are ways to do it without having to be throwing darts at a wall. Okay, now let me hear your counter rebuttal. Let's go. I'm inviting.
I'm speechless, Robert.
I'm trying to get
you. What?
Did I say something wrong?
No. The truth is.
But and I agree that it's an important role.
The truth is you're right, and financial advisors should be telling clients that want to invest in the market that the most efficient way to invest is buying S&P directly and not buying mutual funds. And this is a speech that every honest financial advisor will tell them. The fact that a lot of people don't do that is the same excuse, because everybody else does doesn't mean that you should do the same.
Right. So this is. So, but there's still a need. It means this person is one of my closest friends. This financial advisor. You know, we have a very good relationship. We just have to know what our job role really is. As long as he realizes that's what he's supposed to be performing and helping, that's great. That's a good thing. Okay, let's move on.
The first case about the remix will happen the same here, because a lot of these funds. Or real estate funds, or alternative asset funds, or structured products, they pay a bigger commission, or rebate, or whatever.
Correct. Private mutual funds pay a bigger commission.
Even the same fund can have two series. One
exactly. More two, cap five, S, P, Q, different A, B, C, different
so
shares.
The client signs that there is a commission, but it's a 100-page they don't see. So here the broker should tell.
So I'm doing like this. The broker doesn't have to tell, because like I said, if he's being hired for advice, he has to give the best advice. If he's hired to just manage the wealth, so then it might be room that he's allowed to manage and invest in other funds. But I'm just telling you, really, to be ethical, the way to go is to give the best product for the client. You'll make your money by doing so, holding the person's hands. There's ways to do it. There are ways to do it. But, again, I understand the challenges involved. I got it. I recognize it. We're good. I got it.
Let's do one more Indian.
Yes, one more Indian. So let's do another Indian, and this is going to hit home a little bit. Actually, I was going to do two, but we'll do one, and that is, I understand there are people here in real estate, correct? So let's talk about real estate, okay? Bokshem, the island finished eating, so there's nothing to throw at me now. So I see Bokshem, we sold out a lot. So here's the story, like real estate. This is Maisim B'Choyim, unfortunately, and it really should not be done. But we have to talk about it. Here goes. I apply for a mortgage, and there are ways to get that mortgage. And I could be somewhat creative accounting. We have accountants here too. We could be creative accounting. Numbers don't lie, but lawyers use numbers. So I could play around with certain numbers. My rent roll, my rent income is a little higher than it really is. Well, you know, just this year, it would have been and should have been and could have been, and if everyone is full, and you know, it really should be 92%. Occupied. It just happened to be only 73, but I'm hoping it to get there. There are ways to fudge. I don't know if the right word is, but there are ways to play around with the numbers. There are ways, and basically when you go to a bank and you're getting that mortgage, you fooled the bank. The bank would know the real numbers. Either you would not get the mortgage at all, you'd be denied, or you would get it at a maybe higher, 1/8% more, 0.25% more to be, whatever the terms would be different, and basically you're being mapped to them to get a mortgage that you're not entitled to, at least not entitled to at that rate. And you fool the bank. I'm not talking about it's a federal crime, I'm not talking about it's jail time, I'm talking about it's against halakha. You fooled a bank. And let's talk about other ways of fooling banks, and that is that I buy a home, and I don't intend to move in there, It's an investment property, or it's my second home, it's my vacation home. I don't live in North Miami, it's a great place to visit. Trust me, I've been doing this now year after year. Private Blaze has been so welcome, the community is so welcome, that's nice. But it's only your summer home. I live in New Jersey. Now I'm gonna tell the bank, well, it's my home because I'll be living here 6 months in one day. I don't know what it is, I'll fudge reality. There are different rates. There's a reason why, it's simple mathematics, actuary. It's simple why a residential home gets one rate and why an investment property gets another rate, because people are easier to let go of investment properties than they are from the roof over their heads. And that goes into the price and then the whole concept of mortgages. I'm happy we have a bank here that'll be able to explain it a lot better than me. But it's partial like that. It's so simple. And when you fudge that, basically you fool the bank. And that's, if the bank is Jewish, it's a problem. If the bank is not Jewish, it's a problem. It's a serious problem. That is a problem. And I'm going to take it to the next step, okay? And that is, I want to make this my home. I really do. And I plan on moving into this house eventually. It's just I'm living somewhere else. Take time for me to move my family over from Lakewood to here. Whatever it might be, it might take me 2 years. In the meantime, I'm going to rent it out. I'll renovate. I'll do something. And I tell the bank it's my residential home. Now, it's true that you have a terrace while you think it's a residential home, and in Yetzer Shem it will be a residential home, but I can't speak for Florida, but by us in New Jersey, residential home means you move into the house within 30 days. You move into the house 31 days later, it's not your residential home. Akasha Famaisa is steam on your head, it's not fear, who cares? That's what the bank's rules are. That's what their result. And I tell them it's my residential home, and I don't plan on moving in for another 2 years, I defrauded the bank. That's a no-no. That's against halakha. I'm defrauding a bank. Now, I don't know if this bank here gives loans or they just broker loans, but it's irrelevant. So if the bank is just like the broker between and the loan comes from Countryside or whatever it might be, or Rocket, who cares? It's I'm defrauding somebody. I'm defrauding to getting mortgage that I'm not entitled to, certainly not at that rate. That is a problem. It's another problem of deception. We could talk about a lot of these problems of deception. I'm going to throw in one more, Rabbi Sayed, we ran out of time, and that is occupational therapists. I presume no one in the room is an occupational therapist, so I'm free to discuss this. So basically what happens is you get reimbursed by the government. Much of the industry is being reimbursed by the government. And being reimbursed by the government has strict rules. Sometimes, incredible rules, makes no sense. You can't even understand it, but that's the rule. For example, you cannot get reimbursed for teaching a child, for working on the child on a Sunday or a legal holiday. Now, in our world, again, I can't speak for Laura, but in Lakewood, they don't even know when it's a legal holiday. You know how many people on December 25th goes out to check the mail and comes home and tells his wife, I don't know, the postman didn't come today, I don't know why. You don't even know when there's a legal holiday in Lakewood. It's beyond. It's done. Schools run the same. Everything runs the same. It's regular, right? So, of course, there's occupational therapists on legal holidays, on Sundays, and now we want to get reimbursed for that. So, of course, what do? I taught the kid on December 24th. No, you didn't. You did it on December 25th. You're not entitled to reimbursement. Wow. You're not entitled to reimbursement. You can't lie and fudge and say, now, you have a passion why they made that rule. I don't know why they made that rule, but they have that rule. So then when you fudge that, you're defrauding the government. They have a reason for that rule, and you're asking them to compensate for that, and they have a reason for that. You're stealing from them. You're fooling. It's not action failure. It's not action. You're defrauding them. Sorry? Remember what I started off with? Not everyone's doing it. And I'll give you another example of this. They have a rule that you can't get reimbursed sometimes, depending on the type of therapy you're giving, for more than a half hour slot. So what I do is, I teach the kid for an hour, because it's just more convenient for me and the kid and the parents. Everyone likes it. It's a win-win-win situation. The only one who loses is the government, because I told the government I did 2 half-hour slots, one on Monday, one on Tuesday. And that's defrauding the government. You have no right to do that. Again, that's not Dakin. These type of situations come up. Keseda, I had like a whole list. That's why I put down the paper. I realized I'm not going to get to any part of this list. Again, we'll have to be invited again and to continue. But there's so many situations that we are involved in on a day-to-day. Let's just face this real quick. Like, we are in different industries, and in every industry, we can make a Kiddush Hashem, or we could cut corners. And if we go straight, we'll be making a Kiddush Hashem. We go straight, we'll be following Allah. If we go straight, then we'll be zayik to greater bracha in our business. But if we start cutting corners, doing things that are not what we wouldn't want to be disclosed. We wouldn't want people to find out that we're getting kicked back. We wouldn't want that. If you wouldn't want it, then it's probably not the right thing to do. So if that's the case, Rabbi Tzai, I give you all the bracha. Thank you for coming and spending time with me. I appreciate it. I give you all the bracha. Thank you for my prayers and all of your endeavors, my prayers to all of the industries, and to be able to have a shaykhus with this beautiful kailel that give you a miss. Shkoy for listening.
Yes, we're gonna dive in. Thank you. Okay, to the diet. We're gonna have Daven Mincha on your way out as a gift. Thank you to Yossi Shok for sponsoring the gift. Outside on your way out, you can take the gift, and we're gonna have our dinner. In general, if a person wants, if anyone wants their business to be more involved in the initiative, you can speak to Rabbi Parsons here. And by the way, round of applause for Rabbi Parsons. Thank you for more information about the initiative and how to get involved. Thank you very much all.
Thank you. Where is Parsons? Rocky, is this your phone?